John Hawkins, Right Wing News. Question for you on those wiretaps. One thing that there's been a lot of argument about why the about if the president has the power to do it, and it sounds like he does. Let me ask a question: why did he do it? Why not just go through the normal procedure for those?
And it's a good question as to why. I think if you look at some of the court cases and other presidents who've used it, such as Jimmy Carter, I mean, you can see he had the right to do that, and I think that'll be made clearer and clearer. But why he did it is an important question that is not being asked in the media right now. I think the most important answer to that is what we were doing before 9/11 was clearly not working. Over 3,000 Americans were killed because what we were doing before 9/11 with our intelligence and security was not working. And it cost this country really trillions of dollars in lost wealth. So to assume that the president would continue to do what was doing before 9/11 is hardly a serious assumption. I'm thankful, and I think we need to continue to talk about the fact that President Bush was willing to act swiftly to disrupt communications, to disrupt financing. He did what he needed to do because we were told here in Congress after those attacks that there would likely be a number of additional attacks immediately following that because of the existing terrorist cells in this country. The president had to act quickly, and he clearly acted within his powers. And he clearly now, in retrospect, did it in a way that was effective because we have not been attacked since 9/11.
Senators, this is Tim Chapman from townhall.com. I wonder if one or both of you could comment on the way that the Democrats are really dragging their feet over this last week. We've got defense authorization that's subject to a filibuster, defense appropriates that's subject to a filibuster. And now, potentially, while they can't filibuster the budget reconciliation package because of rules, they are going to raise points of order against it. It could be, in essence, a de facto filibuster if they're successful on those points of order. Could you comment on the prospects of beating back those points of order? Specifically, I think there's one today on a milk program within the bill, and then comment on the stalling tactics in general.
This is John Cornyn. I would say that it's really been a consistent theme of the Democrats to obstruct, drag their heels, slow down whatever it is we've been trying to accomplish here. And their theory seems to be that if they can't have their way, then they are going to deny the majority an ability to vote so we can pass legislation and then presumably claim credit for those bills. But some of it's really causing some dissension in the ranks. I heard on the floor this morning that Senator Max Baucus was complaining to the majority leader that it was Christmas time and people wanted to be home with their families. And the majority leader aptly pointed out that but for the necessity of filing cloture and having votes on cloture on these bills, we could have been out of here long before this. So it's a little hard for me to see what the benefit is, other than maybe they feel like they, since they have the Senate floor to attack the administration on things like the NSA surveillance activities, and they feel like there's some advantage to taking those pot shots. I can't figure out really what's going on in their minds.
Well, John, I think that was a good start. I think clearly the Democrats do not have any ideas of their own. And it's dangerous, in their opinion, for us to show America that we really are working on solutions that would make the future better for all Americans. I mean, their whole tactic is to block what needs to be done and then try to blame the Republicans when it doesn't get done. They're doing that on energy. This week they're doing it on security. It's a very dangerous political game that they're playing. We need to remember that our decimated intelligence system when President Bush took office was a result of political correctness actually implemented in the Clinton administration to keep our intelligence system from hiring needed on-the-ground resources around the world. And now we are really playing a dangerous game with our homeland security by blocking the Patriot Act, which is opened up our ability to combine resources with a lot of our intelligence system in this country. And what I have to think about, everybody needs to step back from all of the minutiae of this debate and realize that those planes that flew into the buildings in New York could have very easily had a nuclear bomb in one of them and destroyed a whole city. Our country is in danger. We need to act quickly and appropriately and within the law. But the Democrats are just playing this as a game, and I think it's at the risk of the American people.
Are you all confident that if the Democrats do succeed in this final week in blocking the Patriot Act and some of these other must-pass pieces of legislation, do you think that as you go home over the break and before you come back next year, you can win that PR battle as to whose fault it was and that people will understand that it was them who blocked this and it wasn't the leadership?
Well, I think that we certainly are going to have to continue to make those arguments. Part of my frustration in the Senate sometimes is that the minority seems so focused and so hungry that they're always on the attack. And, of course, in this atmosphere, an attack unresponded to is an attack believed. So we have to continue to explain why this filibuster is putting the nation at risk. They have now fallen back to their subsidiary or backup argument and claiming that, oh, well, we're being unreasonable in not granting a three-month extension and taking up negotiations after we return in January. But the fact is, none of these issues are new. They've been debated since the original passage of the Patriot Act. There's been negotiations. People have compromised. I've given up things in the Patriot Act that I think should be included. But what we have now is an obstinate minority prohibiting an up or down vote by the majority and obstructing our ability to reauthorize legislation, which is important for the safety of the American people.
This is Jim DeMint, and on public relations, you're exactly right. When we leave here this week, hopefully, we will have to convince the American people that what we're trying to do is what America needs, and what the Democrats are doing are just trying to block and blame. I think the good news for us right now is the president has clearly run out of patience with the Democrats. I mean, he's tired of being stuck in the back by people he's trusted, that he's given good information over the years, which they've apparently packaged and given to the press. And the president is out swinging. He's swinging on Iraq. He's explaining. We're seeing the American people respond. I think you'll see over the next month leading up to the State of the Union that the president is going to be back on offense. And he's going to be drawing the line between Republicans and Democrats. And that's something he has not done very often in his administration. He's been over backwards to try to work with the Democrats. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm happy to see that he's run out of patience because they've been undermining him for a long time. He's continued to try to work with them. But he's our best spokesperson when he gets engaged, and he's certainly engaged right now.
Senator DeMint, Pat Cleary again from the NAM. You came at the tail end of my question to Senator Cornyn. Sorry to be Johnny One Note, but obviously energy, huge issue to manufacturers. Both of you are from big manufacturing states. What's your guess on Anwar and how this will all play out and what our members ought to be doing today?
You know, I know there are a couple of Republicans who still haven't decided what they're doing, and we desperately need their vote. I just think it's inexcusable and irresponsible, given the situation this country is in, to deny the development of our domestic resources of oil. You know, in manufacturing, that we're losing jobs every day because the cost of energy in this country. We're generating electricity with natural gas because we don't have nuclear generation as we should have, but that was stopped years ago. And you can't produce a lot of the manufactured goods in this country and be competitive with energy costs 3 to 5 or even more times expensive than neighboring countries. So we do have a problem, and I think that, again, it gets down to a PR battle, and hopefully folks back home are calling their senators to let them know that Anwar is not just an issue about drilling in Alaska. It's about being competitive as a nation. It's about being secure as a nation. And it's whether or not we're going to be energy independent as a country. So it's a huge part of the issue. If we can't pass Anwar, I think America's in a heap of trouble because that's a low-hanging fruit. We've got to go a lot further than that if we're going to be ready for the future.
Thanks.
Hi, John Hawkins, Right Wing News. Another question related to the wiretaps. Obviously, this information is extremely sensitive, and do you think there needs to be an investigation? Do we need to have a special prosecutor appointed to look into who leaked this information?
Well, I winced a little bit when you mentioned the word special prosecutor. We just had an experience with a special counsel, as they're called now, Peter Fitzgerald, in this Valerie Plame investigation. But it does strike me as ironic that the New York Times, who railed on and on and on about the presumed outing of a covert CIA agent by the members of the administration, is and not having had that stick, has, after sitting on the story for a year, now compromised one of our most sensitive intelligence gathering activities, and now our enemies know what we're doing and how we're doing it. So yes, I believe that the Department of Justice should conduct an investigation and find out, if they can, who violated the law by making this leak, and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. Obviously, the press, once it's disclosed to the press, that's not possible to really stop. But what we can do is punish the people who've leaked it and make an example of them for the future.
Yeah, and this is Jim DeMann. If I could just add to that, I think it creates huge problems between the executive branch in the Congress in the future if the president cannot work closely with some key people here without it being used as political fodder and misused and actually putting our security at risk. And that's what's happened here. I don't know the best way to pursue it, but the real problem is not that the president might have used wiretaps to determine if we had enemy agents in our country. The real problem is that the Congress can no longer be trusted to carry sensitive information, and that's a real problem for us because we need to know what's going on. The Constitution encourages the president, obviously, to keep us advised of these things, but if he can't do that and still manage the security of our country, we've got a problem. So I want to know how this happened, and it was too coincidental for me for this year-old story to come out the day we were trying to package the Patriot Act at the same time the Democrats had coordinated a major press conference. This is a serious coincidence, I'll put it that way.
Senator Mint, Tim Chapman at Town Hall, are you suggesting that perhaps Senator Reid's war room or some others of like mind prompted the New York Times to sit on this story until this exact moment and kind of use it to their advantage?
I'm not going to suggest anything. I'll let you take what you want from that.
But we do know that that Democratic leadership was briefed on the matter and could possibly have leaked it.
Well, there that certainly has. This is John Cornyn again. That certainly has happened before. But Jim's on to something here. It really is a catch-22. Congress complains when the executive branch doesn't consult us, and then when the executive branch does consult us on sensitive matters, then the legislative branch leaks like a sieve and compromises our national security. So then you can see why the executive branch would be reluctant to do that. And so it just seems like a war that nobody can win. That's a shame. Clearly the president and the administration did brief leaders on the intelligence committees over the 4 years or so this program was in place. And even according to the New York Times, they consulted with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court about their activities, and no one, to our knowledge, objected.
I wonder if I could just backtrack real quick on one of my other questions. We got lost in the shuffle there. On the budget votes today, are you all at all worried about these point of orders that may be raised about the budget? Are you confident that we'll be able to pass the budget in the end?
Well, the one the, on the Budget Reconciliation Act, as I understand, that relates to the milk program, which, frankly, I think is a boondoggle. But I understand that unless the budget point of order is waived, that it could, in fact, bring down the whole bill. I've been assured of that by the bill manager, Chairman Judd Gregg of the Budget Committee. And so we're kind of in a strange position. The good news is it's not going to cost any more money. It's not going to increase the size of the deficit. But apparently they're working it, because they've talked to me as recently as lunch about that.
Okay. This is Jim DeMint. My best guess is on every vote where we need a majority, we're going to win those. The concern now is where we have to get 60 votes mm-hmm. for cloture tomorrow. That's where it's a little iffy right now.
Sure. Senators, anybody look into the future? And, you know, we've endorsed Judge Alito. Anybody want to offer an opinion on that? I know that's off topic for today, but
we'll be holding hearings beginning January the 9th. It's been interesting, you know, because of the delay in the hearing from the time that his name was sent here to the Senate. There were a number of people concerned, including me, that this would leave him hanging out there like the proverbial piñata for people to take a whack at. But it's a testimony to the quality of the nominee. And I think also because of the season, it's hard to generate a hate campaign and a negative advertising campaign during the Christmas season. So a lot of this is going to be delayed until the first of the year, and then I expect to see the opponents come out of the starting gates with all guns blazing. But the truth is they'd only have a relatively short period of time till we have the vote in the Judiciary Committee and then on the floor of the Senate. So I expect that Judge Alito will be confirmed.
Yep.
Jim, you have a different view?
No, I would agree. The good news for us is after his name has been out for several weeks now, that they're having to dig back into 25-year-old memos to find any way to criticize him. And he's been on the bench a long time, made a lot of decisions, and no one seems to be going after the way he makes decisions on the bench. So I think unless there's some very unexpected revelation in the hearings, that he's going to be fairly easily confirmed.
Yep.
Senators, I wonder which way you all think is best to respond to recent spat of Democrat attacks about Republicans being a party of corruption. You know, with the Abramoff scandal and all of those types of things. I mean, this is a repeated talking point every time they go down to the floor. How do you respond to that? I mean, it seems like they just have a higher decibel level, and I'm not sure what you want to outshout them or what.
Well, they're angry. There's no question about it, and they think they've tested some phrase before focus groups, and they are going to try to keep selling it. But it's confounded by the facts. I mean, Harry Reid, if you watched Fox News Sunday, Chris Wallace asked him about the $61,000 he had gotten, and he said, "Don't try to pin your corruption on me or the other party's problems on me." And he wouldn't answer the question. Max Baucus, I think yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, gave money back. Brian Dorgan did the same. I mean, the truth is that Jack Abramoff appears to be quite a sleazy operator, and he's kind of gotten a number of people within his orbit who now are trying to basically distance themselves from him. But this is really their attempt to try to connect some dots and sell a narrative, but unless the underlying facts bear it out, support that narrative, it's just not going to be credible. And that's kind of where I think they are now.
Yeah, this is Jim DeMint. I think John's exactly right. This whole campaign started at the first of the year. before we even had given them any ammunition to work with, because I think their pollsters had determined that if they had a shot for re-election or for taking the majority, it was not based on any of their ideas or policies, that they were going to have to come after us. And unfortunately, we were not on offense enough, and nature abhors a vacuum, and I think their voices were louder, and they've continued to echo this theme. And so it's real important that Republicans be on offense with some clear short-term solutions, some longer-term goals. And I know our leadership and president will be out there. And so I think once we get on offense, you're going to see what's happened the last couple of weeks. American people are responding. The president's poll numbers are going up. And when we add our domestic agenda to that, I think we'll be on the right track.